I'm looking at a photograph. We're in a bedroom. There's a little girl on one side of the bed, maybe 4 or 5 years old, wearing a floral nightie, her hair in pigtails, forearms on the pillow. And she's looking at the woman on the other side of the bed, a woman who appears to be, well, a zombie. Cockroaches are crawling out of the zombie's bloody mouth, dozens of them. They're spilling out over the edge of the bed onto the floor. And then you see the picture on the nightstand. It's the zombie and the girl posing together, a smiling mother and daughter. It's gross with all the cockroaches. It's disturbing in its unclarity about what's happened here. And it's alarming because of the innocence on the face of this little girl, which may be what photographer Joshua Hoffine is kind of going for. And as for that young girl in the photo, it's actually his daughter. I'm Brian Ellison, in for Gina Kaufman, and today on KCUR Central Standard, we're exploring the work of Joshua Hoffine, his horror photography, and why he depicts such scenes, and why he uses his daughters as his main subject. Joshua, welcome to Central Standard.
Thank you.
It's good to have you here. So I just have to confess, the first question that comes to mind when I look at this picture and the dozens of others on your website is, what the heck is wrong with this guy?
That's a fair question.
And it's not the first time you've had that reaction, I guess.
No, that is the desired effect, I suppose.
Do you find these photos shocking or disturbing when you look at them?
Well, I think shock, like beauty, is in the eye of the beholder.
Okay.
So for me, they're not that impactful. I was behind the scenes. Everything's orchestrated. I know how much fun it was to shoot the image. But the desired effect on the viewer, who's not privy to that sort of behind-the-doors scene, is definitely one intended to be a shock, horror, disgust, terror, or at least some sort of reaction.
You use the word fun to shoot these photos. Is it fun to put these together?
Yeah, it's a great time. It really is a lot of fun to do them.
It's sort of interesting to imagine that with the content of some of these pictures, which we'll talk about, is surrounded in their making by laughter and people having a good time.
Yeah, I think if it was genuinely dark and upsetting, no one would want to do it with me. And so to keep it light and enjoyable and everyone sort of having fun on set is part of what makes it work to get the work done.
Well, there are very few people who have the words horror photographer in their resume, so maybe we need to step back and look a little earlier in yours. When did this project start, and when did you start taking photos like this?
This was, with my children, my initial horror photography project. I started it in 2003, and if I'm not mistaken, I may have been the one that coined the phrase horror photography. There are some earlier examples of, frightening photography that predates what I was doing. Joel Peter Witkin comes to mind, and he's quite famous, elderly now, and his images are very disturbing and confrontational. But I don't believe he himself would have ever categorized himself as a horror photographer.
What kind of images did he take? Describe one of his.
Well, Joel Peter Witkin, he would utilize actual dead bodies, actual dead babies, any kind of taboo imagery, pre-op transsexuals, mutants, amputees. And unlike my work, which is all staged like you would with a movie, latex and paint, his typically utilized the real thing. And sometimes they would comment on classic art pieces. He's a fairly important and well-regarded photographer, but he became famous, I think, in the 70s and 80s because of how dark his work was.
Yeah, it sounds like he really pushed some boundaries.
Yeah, definitely. Ironically, he sort of describes his work in almost religious terms. He sees himself in sort of the tradition of Christian photography, which for me is a bit of a stretch because all I see is how confrontational the work is and how distressing it is to the viewer to look on his images.
So when you look at your own images, do you find them distressing? Do you find them confrontational?
Well, there's a tension between them, between the subject matter, which is meant to horrify on some level, and the way that they're presented, which is meant to be visually beautiful. I came to the conclusion very early on that if I could make them pretty, people would look at them longer. And so making sure that the image is at once beautiful and inviting, but forcing you to meditate on what you're looking at was sort of the magic trick I was trying to pull off.
And so let's try to give our listeners a sense of that contrast between the beauty and the the disturbingness of these photos. I'm looking at the one that involves a clown holding some balloons.
Oh,
Can you describe that to a radio listener?
That was an early one. That photograph is called Balloons, and it is set in a backyard, and someone has hanging laundry, sheets on a clothing line in the yard. And my daughter Chloe is this tiny little three-year-old in a pink dress approaching the sheet because she can see the shadow, the silhouette of a clown on the other side. You can't see the clown except for his feet underneath the sheet and this batch of balloons floating just above the sheet. And
but it's clear it's a clown because of the clown shoes and the
definitely.
Clown pants.
You can see that it's obviously a clown from the crazy clown hair, and it's got, if you look closely, one long hand full of with long fingers on the hand that's not holding the balloons.
Yeah, fingers and claws.
The claws is probably a better way to put it.
So this is not your ordinary clown.
Right. It's definitely a horror clown. And people are frightened of clowns. They go to body horror. They have to do with the distortion of the human form, the human features. That's why children are oftentimes afraid of clowns. But I think that image has a lot to do metaphorically with just being attracted to things without being aware of the danger surrounding them. So sometimes, even as adults, we'll pursue something that we know is not good for us and just fly in the face of all the warning signs that could possibly be put up. But to make that image work, I do try to keep things fun and safe on set. Frightening the children is never really part of the equation. Making sure they're participating willingly and voluntarily is a big deal, and to keep that safe, I would usually use other family members as the villains. And so the clown behind the sheet, who is in fact not wearing any makeup, is their grandmother. So
I guess I wonder, what is 3-year-old, you said she's 3 in this picture, Chloe,
right.
what does she think is happening while this is going on? Did you tell her, okay, grandma's on the other side of the sheet, just stand there and look at her?
Yeah, more or less with that one. I used 2 daughters primarily for that project, and Shiva was her older sister, and she was 6. And so I was able to explain in more detail what to do with Shiva. Chloe was aware of what we were doing all along, and I think people might underestimate how savvy, you know, a 3-year-old can be when you're trying to do something like this. But she totally understood the artifice of it, and both daughters were, I think, into the idea that we were scaring other people. If as a child you've ever hidden in the bushes to scare a younger sibling, you kind of know the thrill of scaring someone, especially
sure.
as a child where everything kind of frightens you. And to have the power for a moment to be the agent of that type of fear, it was weirdly empowering to them. And so they didn't mind doing this work at all. They kind of looked forward to the next opportunity to, quote unquote, scare people.
I noticed that in all of these that involve your daughters, they're not ever the bad guy or the villain in these photos. They're either the innocent victim or the one who's stumbled upon something horrifying.
Absolutely. I'm hoping that it's the child that the viewer is identifying with, that is the proxy for the viewer. And if I can present these images within the visual grammar of a child, I think it stresses for the viewer that sense of vulnerability that really allows the image to get under the skin that way.
We're going to put some links to some of these pictures and actually put some of them up on our website. That'll probably be up later today at kcur.org/Central Standard. I want to ask you kind of what inspired this project. Take us back to 2003. Are there particular events or issues in the news or in the world that led you to say, I have something to say, and I can only say it this way?
Well, it's funny you should talk about current events, because in 2003, it wasn't that long after 9/11, and there was still a vibrant culture of fear. Fear was in the air, and the media was talking about fear a lot. And I think it was in a conversation about that that I was hanging out with a photographer friend, and it just sort of dawned on me that no one had ever made a horror photograph, not deliberately, the way that you have horror movies and novels and comic books and video games. I was just sort of surprised that no one had ever planted a flag and said, this is a horror photograph. And once I had decided that this was perhaps a good idea to pursue, I guess childhood fears and fairy tale imagery and all the sort of things that were happening at home with my young kids sort of channeled itself into the work right off the bat, so that the earliest images, the ones involving my children, were definitely about an exploration of those archetypal, inherent, instinctual fears that we're born with, and the type of scenarios that I think everyone universally can relate to. We can all relate to the idea of a monster hiding under the bed or in the closet, but I'd never seen a picture of it before. And so to sort of take the monster from out of the darkness, out from under the bed, and into the light of day and take a picture of it was really kind of the initial motivation.
The work sort of went viral at some point, maybe 2008. Everyone in the world started to see these showing up in social media feeds and places like that.
It went big. I had been doing these in private, mostly just for, you know, my own pleasure. It was something dark, admittedly, but fun to do with the kids, and I was sharing them with my friends just to see their eyes bulge and laugh, like, oh my gosh, I can't believe you did that. That's amazing. And the same friend that I had had the conversation with about the invention of horror photography was the same person that suggested I put it online. And when I did, it went viral. It exploded. It went all over the world and resulted in just a wave of press and magazine articles about my work all over the planet. And so it kind of gave me enough courage to just say, all right, I'm Joshua Hoffine, the horror photographer, and this is what I make.
Not all the reaction was entirely positive, I'm guessing.
No, it was fueled by a lot of controversy. I actually have a folder at home of all the early hate mail that I got when the work first came out.
What did they hate? What were they saying?
Well, a lot of people were just so concerned for the children. And in their defense, when the work initially came out, there was no explanation. I think the only tagline was, these are real photographs, these are real children. And so it was definitely sort of a poke in the eye for anyone that was looking at it.
You know, I don't know if I want to say I agree with those folks, but I will say I see their point on some of these photos. I mean, let's take the one that you mentioned. There's a monster in the closet. You can tell it's a monster because there's teeth. It's some sort of creature, and there's a hand reaching around the door. But the mirror on the front door of that closet reflects, I'm gathering, it's your older child.
My daughter, Shiva.
Shiva standing in nothing but a pair of underpants, of panties.
Yes.
Cringing, looking very scared, and it's a disturbing photo in an age of child abuse and predation.
And it was a commentary on those very things. You know, making sure that Shiva was okay with it is one level, but making sure that the impact on the viewer and that the metaphor is right is the other part that I'm really focused on. There's that image, which is a follow-up to an earlier piece called Wolf, where my same daughter Shiva is in a stairwell, trapped, cornered, and a wolf is racing down the stairs about to get her. And you can see that the wolf is reaching out with a human hand. And in both photographs, if you look closely, Shiva is covering herself up. They're not meant to be, you know, fuel for pedophiles in any way, shape, or form. They're meant to be, you know, I guess comments on how those type of people are the real boogeymen of the world. Those are the monsters. And with Wolf, which was the first one, it was largely based on Little Red Riding Hood. And in that story, the big bad wolf is a stand-in, a metaphor for a sexual predator. It is the predatory male. And to make sure that that subtext was coming through, that's why in the end I chose to depict Shiva in that way. In the photograph Closet, which is a kind of sequel in a way, it was still commenting on the same sort of tropes and fears, but this time it acknowledged that oftentimes those type of monsters are within the family or within the family circle. And so him emerging from the closet that way is akin to a skeleton in the closet. Now, although these images are dealing with classic childhood fears, particularly a monster coming out of the closet, they are very deeply mixed up with my own parental fears for my children. And in the earliest photographs, I was digging deep into what scared me the most, as well as my children. And the idea of someone preying on my kids like that was just the darkest, most frightening thing I could think of. And so that's how that work came to be. And I've already admitted that this work was private. I don't know if I would have enough courage to make those images again, knowing what kind of full-throated reaction I got from the public.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a deliberate and conscious attempt at exploring that type of idea metaphorically. You know, the boogeyman is a stand-in for a molester or a child predator.
And I think when we think of the way Little Red Riding Hood and the Big Bad Wolf have been portrayed in other settings, I'm thinking of Into the Woods, the recent movie,
right.
that child predator motif is being played out in other ways that this story is told.
But not with the honest emotion of terror and disgust that I think it rightly deserves.
Mm-hmm.
And I do think that my role as a horror photographer is to show you what you don't want to see. I think that horror is defined by the taboo. I think taboo is defined by horror. I think that horror, when it's doing its job right, is confrontational. It is trying to shake you out of any sort of complacency or, you know, calm emotional state. It's the art form. It is using fear, you know, as a tool, if not sometimes a weapon.
So how old are your daughters now, Joshua?
Shiva is alive and well, and she's 18. She just graduated from high school, and Chloe's 14, and she's in high school as well.
So when they look at these photos now of them, do they look at these photos now?
Yeah, they're familiar with the work. I don't hang it on the walls. I never have. It's one thing to create the images. It's another to have them living underneath pictures of themselves as victims. That was something that was agreed upon between me and their mother at the outset, that if I were to do this work, they could never once be truly frightened, and that they weren't allowed to live with this imagery, so that it might in some sad way affect the way they think about themselves or anything like that.
What do they think of the work? Have you talked about it with them ever?
They're fiercely proud. Even at the time, they were very proud. Chloe, in particular, would sneak prints to school to show friends, and they would wind up, you know, in teachers' hands and in the principal's hands.
Did you get called to the principal's office?
It's funny. Everyone kind of knew what was going on, and everyone was pretty supportive. I did say that when the images first came out, there was very little disclaimer. But because of how much concern there was that these children were being abused somehow, I started a behind-the-scenes blog where you could see everything being put together, and you could see how much fun the kids were having and that they were indeed, you know, voluntary participants. But Chloe loved it so much, she just wanted to show everyone what she had done. And Shiva, likewise, has had a lot of, you know, pride in these accomplishments and how much attention they've gotten. And now they're quite well aware of what all the subtext means. They were not aware of what I was going for subtextually when the images were being made. They were just too young to even try to explain what the metaphor is. But they certainly get it now, and I think they have an even deeper appreciation of what we accomplished now that they're older.
I wonder if we could reflect a little bit here on why horror photography to say the things that you're trying to say here. Is there something about invoking fear that actually dispels fear? Is that what you're trying to do?
I think it does do. It does have an effect. It's an interesting genre to approach because it is metaphorical, it is psychological, but I think it's also existential. We are perhaps the only species on the planet that is burdened with the knowledge of our own mortality. All of us know that someday we are going to die. We don't think about it all the time. We try our best not to think about it. But underneath all of our daily chatter, all of our daily thoughts, is this sad knowledge that this is fleeting, that this is going to end, that there is chaos, there is random violence, that no matter what we say or try to fool ourselves into thinking about the security of the world, that things are in fact absolutely insecure. And horror films sort of stand in almost, you know, as a way to give us a psychological vocabulary for dealing with those type of fears. It gives you, you know, a splashy, artificial way to approach your inherent fears. But that is probably the only time that you're really invited to engage with those type of taboo emotions, like fear or even cruelty. Horror provides an environment where those feelings are sanctioned.
Do you think that the average person looking at these photos gets all that? I mean, maybe that's a question for any artist when you're asking them about their work and its impact on people. But some of them are going to be surprised. Some of them are going to be offended. Some of them are going to be titillated by it. How important is it to you that they understand what you're going for?
Well, I don't have complete control over reactions. It's almost an IQ test. I go to horror conventions, and a lot of my rank and file horror fans perhaps are not that interested in exploring the secret, deeper meanings in these images. But other times I'll have an event where I'm surrounded more by artists, or I'll speak at a college, I'm surrounded more by students, and they really lock on to that aspect of the work, and they want to ask more questions about the existential nature of horror than they do about how, you know, what kind of blood did you use for that? Which, those are the kind of normal questions I get. A lot of technique questions. But for me, at least, it becomes most interesting when you start talking about why we create these images or why certain people enjoy seeing these images.
Is there one image, maybe it's one we've already mentioned, maybe we haven't, that really stands out to you as your favorite or the one you're most proud of?
Well, they're all my children. I love all the photographs. They take
yes,
so long.
Yes, but parents have favorite children. You can tell us.
But I do think that in the Childhood Fear series, there's an image called Basement. And you can see the silhouette of Shiva at the top of these basement steps getting ready to descend into the murky cellar. And when you look down in the frame, you can see peeking up between the steps the face of this awful-looking boogeyman.
Yeah.
And somehow it gets the feeling just right. The feeling I was going for just seems to be nailed with that image. And then, you know, in terms of Jungian psychology and the unconscious, and I think horror as an art form really draws all of its strength from the unconscious, you have a perfect visual metaphor for someone descending into the depths.
And I have to say, I'm looking at that picture now, too. It is also just visually beautiful.
It's pretty, thanks.
That you sort of can't take your eyes off it. You look at the lighting, but then there's that horrible, horrible smile on the face of the boogeyman under the stairs.
Yeah.
Do you what's next here? You've actually got a Kickstarter out there. You've more than doubled or almost doubled your goal, at least as stated in the Kickstarter project. You obviously have a huge following. Where are you going with this?
Well, I'm so grateful you mentioned it. I am in the last 2 weeks of my Kickstarter campaign to publish my first ever book, and it's a compilation of over 13 years worth of work. As time has gone on, the projects have become more and more grandiose, larger sets, more characters, more special effects. And so I've only been able to create two or three a year. And so at that pace, it's taken me this long to finally have enough compiled to publish. But I'm hoping to take that around as soon as it's in my hands to movie producers and try to get a full-length horror movie off the ground that is sort of based on the aesthetics and ideas presented in the photographs.
Well, I want to thank our guest, Joshua Hoffein, for sharing both his work and these ideas and this understanding of it. Thank you so much for being with us.
I appreciate you having me. Thanks again.
Next up, something else that some people find horrifying, others a source of joy, commercial development. There's a new retail and residential area on the way in Overland Park. I'm Brian Ellison. We'll hear all about it and how something like that affects a community in just a minute when KCUR's Central Standard returns.